welcome to By Any Means Necessary on Radio Sputnik in Washington, D.C. I'm your host, Eugene Puryear, and as always, we're your guide to connecting the political, social, and economic movement shaping the world around us. And today we are going to be talking a little in the shmore later in the show about some things going on with Haitian immigrants here in the United States. Radio Sputnik in Washington, D.C. I'm your host, Eugene Puryear. Stay with us.
By any means necessary.
And today we are talking about the story that, AP had the exclusive this morning. It's spreading all around about the U.S. Department of Homeland Security taking aim at Haitian immigrants and temporary protected status for those who are coming from Haiti. And we are very happy to be joined for this conversation by Kim Ives, who's the editor of Haiti Liberté. Kim, thank you so much for joining the show.
My pleasure, Eugene. Always glad to be here.
So, I mean, this is really, on so many different levels, an unbelievable piece. But I think the biggest piece here around what is going on with the Trump administration is they're trying to remove the temporary protected status for folks who are coming from Haiti as immigrants. And so I was hoping you could give a little bit of background as to the TPS for Haitians, the relationship to the earthquake, and what the impact of this type of decision has been on the community, or could be.
Well, just as your listeners may know, TPS, or temporary protected status, is for people who have endured a terrible natural disaster or political conflict and therefore are granted asylum in the States on humanitarian grounds. Now, the absurdity of this whole investigation is that TPS is only granted if you have no criminal background. Okay, granted, might have been one or two TPS or a few TPS beneficiaries who might have committed crime since they obtained it back in 2011 after the earthquake of 2010. But you can't penalize 50,000 people for what a few people might have done. And it's looking more like this is really to provide a pretext for the whole argument that Trump has made his, we could say, a logo, which is that immigrants are criminal, starting with his campaign charge that Mexicans were rapists and murderers.
And you know, I mean, it seems like this is part of a long-term pattern here in the United States of Haitian immigrants being sort of targeted as the tip of the spear of sort of any big social problem that they're trying to spin. I mean, the HIV/AIDS crisis, I mean, so many different things over the years. So it seems like this is sort of fitting in with the typical demonization of Haitians that I think is maybe, I don't know, certainly greater than many other countries where there's large amounts of immigration coming from.
Right. Haiti has always been, as the first and last successful slave revolution in history, Haiti has always been demonized. We can go back to the 19th century and some of the books and articles that were written at that time about the Black Republic, the land of voodoo, the dark continent, the cannibals, snakes, you know, all these images which are continue until today. I mean, of all the countries in the Caribbean, Haiti has one of the lowest crime rates in the Caribbean, if not the lowest. Cuba might hold the lowest, but Haiti is maybe the second. And so we have an incredible campaign, really, to try to portray it as this lawless, anarchic society and culture.
And I think the other issue that's at stake here, too, that they were, and this was like an unbelievable part of the email, they were saying, look for stories that show that there's like good things happening in Haiti. One of them was, quote unquote, rebuilding stories of how the U.S. is helping certain industries and stuff like that to essentially just sort of suggest everything's fine in Haiti. No big deal. Like, yes, they had that earthquake. So, I mean, what is the humanitarian situation currently in Haiti? And is the Trump administration off base by trying to create the perception that, you know, it's all good?
Well, yes, they're way off base. You have first Hurricane Matthew, which passed over the southern peninsula last October and basically destroyed all of its food production. And right now we're experiencing 6 months later, 9 months later, the terrible famine that has resulted from that. You have a cholera epidemic, which continues raging and was also exacerbated by Matthew. That was brought about by UN occupation troops who let their sewage leak into the headwaters of Haiti's largest river, the Artibonite, and it spread throughout the country. So now the worst epidemic in the world of cholera is Haiti. You have earthquake recovery, which is still incomplete. You have thousands of people who have not found housing, mostly because the Haitian bourgeoisie has not provided the land for rebuilding houses, and where they have resettled people is on deserts. And, you know, but the main reason here is that most of these 50,000 deportees are supporting tens of thousands of Haitians in Haiti. Haiti's main source of aid, of income, is from Haitians working in the United States, Canada, Europe, who send home remittances. So when you cut off 50,000 people doing that here in the States, you are immediately impoverishing the country.
And, you know, one thing that I thought about sort of immediately when I saw one of the things they were looking for were stories of the U.S. helping certain industries. I said, well, that's ironic that that's something that they're looking for as a measure of progress. And I mean, I was hoping you could talk a little bit too for our listeners about the role the U.S. has played in the textile industry and other sort of sectors when they have become involved in the Haitian economy.
Well, the textile industry, the assembly industry in Haiti, was one of the first incursions of U.S. capital. I mean, Haiti's greatest resource is its cheap labor. A factory owner once told me, and this is how U.S. manufacturers see it. I mean, they're always looking for cheap labor wherever they can find it. And, you know, of course, this is the great irony of our age, Eugene, is they want freedom of movement for commodities, you know, free trade. They want freedom of movement for capital to invest anywhere and be repatriated to the U.S. But they don't want freedom of movement for the third component of any economy, which is labor power, people. They want them to stay put. They have to stay in these cheap labor prisons, which are Haiti, Dominican Republic, Costa Rica, Honduras, wherever, that they can keep them. And so no movement for people, movement for the money they produce, they create. And so this is essentially the basis on which the assembly industry, primarily textiles, clothing, underwear, Gildan is big there, Fruit of the Loom, etc. And the U.S. is doing everything they can to support those industries because it makes for cheaper products and, most importantly, bigger profits here in the U.S.
Yeah, I mean, it really is an unbelievable issue in so many ways, and one that, in fact, was sort of a small issue during the presidential campaign here in 2016 in the United States, because Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton have sort of, well, going back for some time when Bill Clinton was president, but played a big role in some of really sort of the worst U.S. policies towards Haiti.
Well, yeah, that was their, I could say, downfall in Haiti. Was here was a country which suffered an earthquake in Port-au-Prince, in the area of Port-au-Prince and Laogan, which is, for people who aren't familiar with Haiti, down around the bottom part of the mouth of Haiti as you look at the Bay of Port-au-Prince. Where did they choose to put a factory making cheap labor products? Up in the very north of Haiti, which wasn't affected by the earthquake at all. So this, essentially, the earthquake provided the pretext for them to come and put more of these totally, I could say, exploitative sweatshops in place in Haiti. And, you know, this is the big master plan of the U.S. and I could say the U.N. and Canada and France as well, is essentially to build industry, to build an economy based on sweatshops and tourism.
Yeah, and you know, it's I'm glad you brought up the UN, because certainly the other, it's not new news, but sort of big news coming up here in Haiti that I'm curious your thoughts about is the so-called UN stabilization mission inside of Haiti. I believe it was there for about 13 years, highly controversial. Now saying they're going to end their mission there by October 15th of this year, 2017. Your thoughts on that decision?
Well, in Haiti Liberté, we point out that, in fact, this is a big shell game, a big fake news story, because they're not really pulling out. Mm. They're pulling out the soldiers from Haiti, which they have about 3,000 there, but they are leaving about 1,000 policemen. Now, you know, the difference between a soldier and a policeman is essentially semantic. They're both armed men or women. And in this case, they're keeping 1,000 in there. Now, people may say, well, it's a lot less, but it's the thin edge of the wedge. That is, the Haitian Constitution explicitly says there can be no armed force on the national territory of Haiti other than the Haitian army and the Haitian police. So this is simply a way for the UN to maintain its role in Haiti. And the head of MINUSTA was very explicit about it in her April 11th speech at the UN. She said, this force that's going to be remaining in Haiti after October 15th, which is called now MINUJUST, that's J-U-S-T with an H on the end, MINUJUST, is going to be there to supervise, watch over, monitor the Haitian elections and the Haitian state. So they really see themselves as some sort of, I don't know what, parents, guides, tutors for Haitians, and it's a complete violation of Haitian sovereignty.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be interesting to see the way it plays out. And it was interesting to see. I thought that the UN sort of the basis of their saying that, like, oh, yeah, we can move on, is that the new president had been, you know, sworn in. They're saying that he's, quote unquote, the legitimate leader, whatever that may be. And there was quite a bit of turmoil over that election. So, Mr. Moyes, I'm curious your thoughts about sort of what his government is going to be trying to do inside of Haiti and why sort of him being inaugurated essentially perhaps was the starting gun for the UN to feel like they could start to change the color, change the stripes perhaps of what they were doing, if not the thrust.
Well, in fact, there's been a movement to get the UN out of Haiti for years, and they had been looking at the period of 2016-17 as the period for withdrawal. So Moïse, Jovenel Moïse is essentially a Haitian version of the Trump administration. This is a mafia in power. He is already under indictment for money laundering. There was a report put out by the anti-corruption unit of Haiti, which showed very clearly he was laundering some kind of money, but its source, we don't know. I don't think anybody knows yet. Was it drug trafficking? Was it money from Venezuela's Petrocaribe program in Haiti that they were laundering so that he could use it to finance his campaign, which was head and shoulders more, had more money than any other campaigns. Despite that, only less than 20% of the Haitian population turned out, which is a record low for any election in Latin America in history. So you have an extremely unrepresentative government. And it didn't just happen in the executive. It happened in the parliament, too. And this was something that former President René Préval had been warning U.S. officials in WikiLeaks documents that Haiti Liberté published back in 2011 and 2012, had been warning them that you are getting mafia, drug dealers, kidnappers, human traffickers. All these people are coming into power. Now they are in power in the parliament and unfortunately in the executive as well. So it's very similar to the situation we have here in the state.
Yeah, well, certainly it's one of those issues that I think that often flies under the radar because people just know very little about Haitian politics here in the United States. And I'm curious, one thing I certainly know that a lot of people don't know, there's actually quite a bit of popular mobilization that takes place on a regular basis. It happened around the election, around other things. I mean, what is the state of the popular movements in Haiti right now that I think historically have been quite resilient despite many, many setbacks over the years?
They are very resilient. The Haitian people are very politically conscious and I could say politically sophisticated and astute. However, they have been dealt a very difficult hand right now. And there's something called metal fatigue. You know, when you push metal back and forth after a while, it can break. So I'd say there is some kind of fatigue. Essentially, the back of the Lavalas movement has been broken by this last election. The two Lavalas candidates, Maurice Narcisse of Aristide's branch of Lavalas and a breakaway candidate called Moïse Jean-Charles, both fared quite poorly, or I could say they didn't mobilize the 80% 80% of Haitians that basically sat out, 80% of the Haitian electorate that just sat out of the last election, boycotted it, in fact. So the movements, the base movements, the social movements at the base of Haitian democracy, we can say, since 1986, when Jean-Claude Duvalier was run out of the country, are really sitting and discussing, rethinking how to go forward. You know, what is the next step? Because clearly the sort of social democratic half-stepping approach that Lavalas carried out in its 25 years of dominance, basically from 1990 through this most recent election, has not been very successful. They were able to be ousted by two coup d'etats and supplanted by two military occupations, both by the UN. And as a result, I could say Haiti is in a period of realignment and reassessment.
I mean, I think it's a relevant issue because the sort of broader wave of you know, left-wing governments in Latin America, in some ways, you know, under quite a bit of siege in Venezuela and other places, and some places like Ecuador maintaining itself. And it always has seemed that for the United States especially, preventing any sort of similar leftward movement in Haiti is almost like one of their number one hemispheric foreign policy goals.
Absolutely. And Haiti has always been, in a way, the groundbreaking country. I mean, Haiti was the first nation of Latin America to get its independence. It was the Haitians that provided Bolivar and Miranda, the guns, the boats, the troops, the printing presses to carry out the liberation of the continent. And in 1990, Jean-Bertrand Aristide, the former parish priest, was the first to really foil U.S. election engineering in Latin America. And it was after his victory that Hugo Chavez and Evo Morales and Correa and others in Latin America said, hey, we can make these political revolutions through the ballot box. And unfortunately, we see a lot of that being beaten back by the U.S. and all its various agencies. But I think, nonetheless, Haiti remains a sort of beacon and always will be a flashpoint for a progressive change.
Well, I think that is a good note to end on, and I do appreciate that. That is Kim Eyes. He's the editor of Haiti Liberté. Definitely please check out all their work if you're looking to keep track of the things that are going on in Haiti as we move forward on all these issues. That is going to do it for us on today's show. You were listening to By Any Means Necessary on Radio Sputnik in Washington, D.C. I'm your host, Eugene Perrier. See you next time.
By any means necessary.